It's a big pleasure to have Flamie Grant visiting The Antidote. It's so good to have you here, Flamie.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
I have to admit that I did struggle to say your name right. Because it would have been way too easy to have called you Amy Grant.
I know, right?
Now, her music must have played an influence on you.
Yes, believe it or not, she definitely did. That's where the name came from. It's an homage to her and her legacy and everything that she means to me, which is a lot. Growing up, I was only allowed to listen to Christian music. So, you know, every little gay boy has their diva that they love and fall in love with when they're young. And because I wasn't allowed to listen to the Cher's and the Madonnas and the Britney Spears of the world, I was only allowed to listen to Christian music. Amy was kind of that person for me.
Well, Amy was huge in the 80s. I mean, everybody knew her music. So I'm guessing now it's Flamie's turn to take over those reins.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. There's no replacing or, you know, even a succession, I don't think is really the right term. I do my own thing. It's not my music. I'm not trying to be derivative of Amy. It's just more of an homage in the name. And she's still making music. So I actually have tickets to see her next month in Nashville. So,
wow. Now, you're saying the name is just an homage. But you actually did a true homage because you did a cover of one of Amy Grant's songs with Semler.
Yes.
Takes a Little Time. You know, that wasn't an overly popular song of hers. So what was the appeal of doing your own version of it?
Yeah, well, it really fit for me. That song just fit on the record. My first record was called Bible Bell Baby. And it's a lot of things, but one of the things I was trying to do with those songs is just to create space for people who feel hurt, burned, scarred, you know, in some way disenfranchised by the institutions of faith that may have raised us. And so being able to take that song from Amy, slow it down a little bit, kind of create a more of a meditative vibe to it. I mean, the messaging of the song just fit right in with exactly what I wanted to sing about and say on that record. So, you know, it takes a little time to process trauma of any sort, including religious trauma. And so it's a nice breather in the middle of that record, I think, to just give people pause and a chance to feel their feelings a little bit.
Right. Something that's in common with Flamie Grant and Semler is that both of you are queer artists.
Mm-hmm.
In your own case, how did the church respond when you came out?
Well, which church do you want to talk about? Because I got responses across the spectrum, you know? My coming out process was a decade long. You know, in my early 20s, I started telling close friends and people that I worked with in church. I used language like I struggle with same-sex attraction, you know, it's mm-hmm. a very slow way to ease into that process of kind of coming out. And throughout that course of my 20s, as I kind of did my own processing, did my study and everything, by the end of my 20s, I'm here, I'm queer, get used to it, you know, so that was my trajectory and my journey. Mm. And along the way, I had every response you can imagine. I had people who were gentle and understanding and wanted to listen and wanted to hear what my experience was like. And then I also had people who I hadn't talked to in years come out of the woodwork and, you know, be very accusatory and be very, kind of passive aggressive with the, well, we're praying for you that you come back to the light kind of thing. And I'm like, you haven't talked to me in 5 years, David. What what's going on? So all across the spectrum.
You do tell a bit about that on your new album, Church. The song Hard to See Me Happy, part of the verses say, even though I was gay, they let me stay as long as they believed it made me hurt. Yeah, they were always fine as long as I was suffering. Now that certainly wasn't showing Christ's love. I mean, how unfair was that?
Yeah, it feels very unfair. Behind that line is a whole history, you know, just decades long history with the church where I really did struggle to belong and fit in and do what I thought I was supposed to do, which was, you know, change my orientation. I underwent years of conversion therapy. I spent a long time where I was just committed to being single and celibate. And as long as I was living in such a way as to not cross very specific lines with the evangelicals that I worked with in church, they were kind of okay. You know, like there was one church I worked at where they assigned me a kind of accountability buddy in another pastor on staff. And we would meet weekly and we would talk. And I was, you know, meeting a certain set of criteria, which is just basically to be celibate and to not encourage my queerness in any way. Then they were okay. They were okay. Like, yeah, you can lead worship here. You just have to like stay in this lane. And as soon as I started to veer out of that lane and explore, you know, what life could look like if I were to be authentically myself, so as soon as I stopped hurting emotionally, then it started to hurt in relationship with the churches. That's when things got tough, and I got kicked out of a couple churches, including one that I started. And there was very little interest in my emotional and spiritual well-being in terms of being a happy human being, right? Happiness was not the goal for them. The goal for them was for me to just stay in line at all costs, including the cost of my own mental health.
But you stayed with your faith, even though it was difficult.
I've gone around the block a few times with my faith, and I've had a whole bunch of different ways that I've looked at it and talked about it and identified with it. I was talking about this just with a friend the other day about why I'm still doing this. Why am I like releasing music in the Christian genre, and why am I still playing in church? And what is it that's compelling me to stick around in this, really this institution that largely doesn't want anything to do with queer people? And for me, it's, I kind of have to answer that question with, well, why not? You know, I honestly don't know how I couldn't, as an artist, bring my whole self to my art. That's what it's about, right?
Like, true enough.
I can only write and perform about my own experiences. And my own experiences are largely based in an upbringing that was very fundamentalist and very evangelical. And that's still the language I speak. It's still like the metaphors are in my bones. And I've honestly tried over the years. I've tried to just fully abandon my faith and walk away from all of this. And it's never really worked for me. There's something in it that keeps me tethered to it and wanting to see progress happen for people like me in the church. Honestly, that's the biggest reason why I think I stick around, is because I know what it's like to be a queer kid coming up in an oppressive evangelical space. And if I can do anything at all to make it easier for that next generation of queer kids, then I can't think of a better way to spend my life.
Here's something that ties into that. A couple of years ago, you said on Facebook, "My faith is far more mystical these days, and irreverent, and playful, but still so holy to me." Now, you'll have to explain how your faith can be both holy and irreverent at the same time, because those seem to be at the opposite ends of the spectrum.
I don't have to explain that. You know, I think a big part of the place I've come to in my journey is not being held accountable to other people's standards for faith, right? Faith is an incredibly personal experience. And the way we practice our spirituality, the way we find wholeness, that's a personal thing. And I spent a good portion of my life justifying my faith, justifying my spiritual practices to people. And I just kind of no longer have an interest in doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so when I say things, and that's an interesting, I'll have to go back and find that Facebook quote, because I don't fully remember what the context of that was. But when I say that something is mystical, and then kind of give that sort of the statement of, yeah, it's irreverent and it's also super holy. I mean, holiness to me isn't the idea of like being pure, right? Holiness isn't purity. Holiness is being connected to whatever it is that we call God, that divine experience, that transcendent experience, that moment when you feel in your body and in your bones that you've tapped into something that's invisible, right? And for me, that has often, not always, but often come through music. And you can be irreverent in that you play with the tropes of faith and you maybe flip things on their heads a little bit. I think I've done some of that, especially on this most recent record with songs like Last Days. Mm-hmm. But to me, that is still holy work. Singing a song like Last Days, where I'm saying, hey, like, let's talk about the apocalypse that y'all are so afraid of. And let's talk about what the intended outcome of Judgment Day actually is, right? The intended outcome of that is justice for people who have been hurt and wounded and wronged. And that's holy work to me, deeply connected to my own understanding of the divine.
No, I wasn't being critical when I was bringing up that last point, because as you say, people's faith evolve, it changes, it morphs, and it's just a matter of this is where you're comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I didn't feel like you were being critical at all. I just wanted to make that point that people like to try and pin you down, you know? I get that a lot online, people wanting to know, well, are you a Christian? And I'm like, well, how do you define Christianity? You know, like, for me, a Christian is a follower of Christ, a follower of the way of Christ, like, plain and simple. And, you know, every creed and every denominational practice and doctrine that came into place in the thousands of years following Jesus's recorded life, like, that's all been added on.
Oh, absolutely.
I think you can be a follower of Christ, a Christian, just simply by following the way of Christ. So, yeah, you know, semantics are fun.
You seem to be exposing your soul and your motivation on the church album, like on Do It For The Song. I ain't writing for the radio, not gonna lie. I kind of hope they play it, though, because you might think I'm a star. If this came on in your car, I hope they play this on the radio. So, of course, now here you are actually on the radio with the antidote. But there's a lot more happening in the song, so maybe you should fill us in.
Yeah. I felt like this was the kind of a little bit of a thesis statement, right, for the record, and sets the tone for the record, which is why it's the first song on Church. But it largely comes from my experience over the past year. You know, I've only been doing this job full time for a little over a year. And I've been connected to some really phenomenal organizations like Folk Alliance International and, you know, just folk festivals like the Kerrville Folk Festival in Texas, where you spend a lot of time around campfires or just in song circles with other musicians and seeing the reverence that so many people have for the craft of songwriting. This craft, which I've been doing much longer than drag, right? Like, I wrote my first song when I was 9 years old. It carried me through so much of my life. It's how I've worked out a lot of my feelings and figured out some of the things that I do believe and do value is by writing them down in songs and that's soul work for me. So, I don't know. Do It For The Song was just kind of this, I wanted to make this declaration of like, look, I know that there's a lot going on when you look at an artist like me and you see the drag and you see all of the controversy and you see the envelope pushing. Some is intentional and some is, you know, not intentional. Some is just perceived. But what it all really comes down to for me is that I love this craft that we all participate in as songwriters. And I think it's work that can make a really good impact in the world. And that's what I want to be about. I want my songs to have impact and to matter and to move people the way that I've been moved by songs throughout my life.
You just brought up a point that I hadn't mentioned yet, that you're a drag queen.
Yeah.
Now, I got to tell you a story. My wife and I were at a wedding this summer, and one of the guests was in drag. And my wife couldn't get over their outfit. But that said, do you know how long it would take to do makeup like that? So now I can hear the answer by asking you, how long does it take?
It probably depends on like how long they've been doing drag and their own artistic like vision for their drag. Because some people have a really elaborate costuming and makeup that, you know, probably takes a little bit longer. I do pretty traditional looking, I think, drag. And initially, when I first started, it would take me a good 4 hours to pull it off. And it didn't look great at the end of 4 hours. But I've been doing it now for about 4 years. And if I have to, I can get it all done in an hour. I like to give myself 2 because then it's less stressful and I just have the time to kind of take my time with it. But there have been plenty of times when I've been in a rush and had to do it all in an hour. So I can get it done in an hour if I have to.
Because you are a professional.
Be relatively pleased with the results. Well, yes, I am now.
And your outfits, they must cost a fortune.
Yeah. Drag is not a cheap hobby by any means. There are ways around it. You know, sometimes I definitely have my fair share of like things I found on cheap Amazon websites and things like that. But when you have a very specific vision for how you want to look and the kind of drag you want to pull off, you generally are either learning how to do that yourself. So a lot of drag artists make their own costumes. I'm not talented in that department or skilled in it yet. I've been slowly learning how to do some of that, but for the most part, I pay other designers to, create the costumes that I want to wear.
What you and I have just been speaking about comes up in the song Sparkle. When I finally picked up that brush, dragged it through the blush, oh, what a revelation. It felt like a salvation. When I painted what was inside out, puckered her lips and pouted, what a situation. I think I found my new vocation. You must be pleased with being able to do this and to be accepted.
Yeah, I'm very, very pleased to be able to do this. It's so many dreams come true in one package. You know, I've always been a person who's kind of centered in my interests. I love obviously music and songwriting, and I love just writing in general. I love performing. I love obviously the costuming and the makeup and everything of drag, and you get to put it all together in this one like highly concentrated art form. And it's an honor that anybody cares to listen and to come to my shows and experience the drag and experience the music. It's delightful. And it's the fulfillment of really a lot of childhood ambitions and just lifelong dreams.
Let's talk about that playing shows. Because I checked into your tour calendar and saw that Flamey Grant plays a ton of shows. Like, I mean, so many. And I also noticed that many of your dates are played in churches.
Yeah.
So you have actually found acceptance then in the church itself.
Yes. Yeah, don't believe the narrative that the American, exclusively and only antagonistic towards queerness. That's just, unfortunately, the loudest sect of church, at least in the United States. But there are so many folks who are excited about what I'm doing. Church leaders who emails constantly from churches inviting me to come to their congregations and perform or do something on Sunday morning with them or church conferences. It's been really encouraging for me over the past year to see how many places are doing work in their own local communities to try and create safe space for queer folks.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's happening. And it's an honor every time I get to do it. And yeah, I do play a lot of shows. I think partly just me being new to this job, like I said, I've only been doing this full time for just over a year now. So I've just said a lot of yeses, out of not really knowing how much work I needed to do in order to make a living. And I'm starting to get the hang of it now, and maybe we'll have more of work-life balance, but it's been a lot of shows this past year.
Well, I do understand where you're coming from, because the church I attend is supportive of the LGBTQ community. But in the States and in Canada, in the last year, maybe you say it's just the vocal few that are starting to, I don't know, not give backlash, but maybe just saying grief to that community.
Yeah, it's unfortunately the state of things right now. Really about the time I started picking up makeup brushes and doing drag was when drag and trans folks in particular really became this hot button scapegoat talking point for far right conservatism. And they latched on to, it's a huge talking point in this last election here in the States. Was just trans people and trans identities and gender nonconformity in general is under the magnifying glass. And it's funny because I just really set out to do, I just started doing drag because it was good for me. It was something that felt life-giving to me. And then, you know, I learned really quickly that just by being a gender nonconforming person in the world, you also have to be an activist because it's going to come to you whether you want it or not. So yeah, there's a lot of work to be done.
You share a bit about that on your song Revenge.
Yeah.
From the distant past of Flamey Grant.
Yeah. That was a song I wrote thinking about some of the times in my life and people that I've been involved with. Just literally from childhood and then into my adult professional life working in the church. Just recognizing these moments that were really hard for me at the time. And, you know, maybe at the time I would have wanted revenge on those people. I would have wanted some comeuppance or some justice to be done. And I think, you know, with time and growth and maturity, at least the place I've landed with a lot of that stuff is, you know, I don't care about like individual personal retribution, but I do hope and pray that people who have wronged me in the past, like maybe will have done a little bit of work themselves so that they stop doing that to other people at the very least. Like, can we just have a world where queer people can exist and not have to fight for that existence all the time? That would be really, really nice. And to me, it's a very tongue-in-cheek song, but you know, the whole thrust of it is go to therapy. You know, I'm tired of the traumatized being the only ones who go to therapy, right? Like, it's time for traumatizers to also pony up, pay their fair share, support the mental health industry, and go to therapy.
Something I really do appreciate about Flamey Grant and how you're different from other drag queens is because the songs you perform on your own, they're not covers. Plus, your songs they're really heartfelt. I mean, you're exposing yourself. But I'd like to hear your thoughts. Should other drag queens also go in that direction?
Well, yes, if that's what they want to do. You know, it's RuPaul herself who says that you bring who you are to drag. Mm-hmm. That's what makes your drag yours. And so for me, when I came to drag, I came to drag in my late 30s. And, you know, so I was not going to be doing death drops and stunts. And, you know, I can do a lip sync and hold my own in a drag show. But really, who I am is a songwriter. And that's who I've been since, you know, the age of 9. And so I just bring my whole self to my art, and that goes through that drag process, that drag filter. That's what comes out, is some really sincere songwriting, some more cheeky and fun songwriting. But I don't see that drag has to be only camp or only fierce. I think we have this like cultural like idea of drag as being this like, oh yeah, like work, slay, you're fierce, you're bold, and yes to all of that. Like, that is obviously a big part of what drag is, because it is challenging norms as being subversive. But you can also be subversive and you can be soft, and you can be subversive and be sincere. So yeah, I think there's lots of room for all kinds of expressions in drag. And at the end of the day, drag is theater, right? And theater can be anything. It can be comedy, it can be drama, it can be musical, it can be horror, it can, you know, it can be all sorts of things. And so drag is just that. Like, who are you and what do you bring to your drag? Because that's what we want to see when you go on stage as a drag artist.
And that's the thing, because this really is your true self.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a really important point. Drag, it's an expression of what's going on inside. And even though you are dressing things up and you are, you know, changing your very physical appearance and all that, it doesn't mean that that's not authentic, right? It doesn't mean that you're being fake. Drag, in fact, when it's done well, is exactly what you just said. It's an expression of who we really are and how we perceive the world and how we walk around in the world. And also, it's kind of, I think it's prophetic in a way. I think drag can be very prophetic because it's casting a vision for the world we want to live in, right? A world where self-expression is celebrated. So that's, I mean, talk about holy work. That is holy work to me.
I've really been monopolizing your time, but we do have a last song to chat about.
Yeah.
And appropriately enough, it's titled Last Days. And a key line from the song is, "These are the last days of weaponizing faith. It's not holy if it's making you suffer." Now, when I read that, it seems like Flamie Grant is a preacher as much as a singer. But are people paying attention?
Yeah, that's a good question. I hope so. That song is a kind of a direct response to my own biggest moment, I guess you would call it, because the whole reason most people know about me is because of a certain preacher who shall go unnamed, who kind of came for me on Twitter and, you know, saw that there was a drag queen doing Christian music. And this person has a huge following online, and they posted a picture of me and said, "These are truly the last days. We've got a drag queen in Christian music." And so that song is a direct response to that moment in my own life, because that moment is what kind of put me in front of a lot more eyeballs than I ever probably would have seen me otherwise. And I hope a message like what I've got on Last Days breaks through a little bit to people, because, you know, that's why I wrote it. I mean, you want to talk about being prophetic? To me, Last Days is literally just a drag prophetess out here kind of railing at the institution and saying, y'all are doing so much damage to their own kids. I come from this world of evangelicalism. I was born and raised and bred in it, and I know it well. And I'm here telling you that you're hurting us. So many queer youth, especially queer youth who come up in oppressive religious spaces, they don't make it. That's why we have higher self-harm rates and suicide rates among LGBTQ plus youth, is because y'all are telling us that we are broken and unholy and unworthy and unloved, and that is damaging. And so that is why a song like Last Days exists.
Well, I hope people do pay attention.
Thank you. Me too.
Flamie, this has been great. Thanks for coming and speaking with The Antidote.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.